You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast where we talk about all of Major League Baseball. And I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully on this episode, which is being dropped on Tuesday, the 14th day of April, 2020. We're going to be going over a couple of things that I think and believe and reveal that someone, in fact, a couple people, got the trivia question. This show is available on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts. When you're locked in at home, like everyone else is right now, and you're doing the right thing, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it is your team every day, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball. Great show for whenever we get our fantasy baseball teams going. They'll have all the best and the brightest and the most up-to-date news of what to do to win your team. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On MLB underscore net. We're on Instagram at Locked On MLB. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Hey, I gave a trivia question a few days ago, last week. I posted it online. I posted it on Instagram. I posted it on Twitter. I mentioned it on the podcast. And nobody seemed to get it for the first bunch of days. But lo and behold, I got a couple of people who were spot on, or at least close enough that I'm going to give them credit. So let's go to the trivia question itself. The trivia question was, what do these Hall of Famers have in common? What specific thing do these specific Hall of Famers have in common? Joe DiMaggio, Willie Mays, Johnny Mize, Eddie Matthews, Pedro Martinez. Now, I posted on there initially, I got some people, you know, giving joke responses. Someone said, well, they all played for a New York team. Nope, Eddie Matthews didn't. And then some other people said, oh, they're all Hall of Famers. Yeah, someone, Javi wrote, they all have an M in their last name. Eric Bobarek wrote, they all wore pinstripes. They all finished their careers in the Eastern Division. They all played on New York teams. Then when I posted it on Instagram, I gave a very, very big visual hint. If you looked at the picture that I posted on Instagram, I was giving a gigantic hint of what they all had in common. And I'll explain to you by just describing the pictures. The first picture is a picture of Joe DiMaggio later in his career, in the early 50s. The picture of Willie Mays is him with the New York Mets. The picture of Johnny Mize is a picture of him with the New York Yankees. The picture of Eddie Matthews is with the Detroit Tigers. The picture of Pedro Martinez is with the Philadelphia Phillies. Now, obviously, any picture of Joe DiMaggio playing is going to be him in a Yankee uniform. You could dig up those weird pictures of him wearing an Oakland A's uniform when the A's moved over to from Kansas City and Joe D was hired to be a coach. But Willie Mays as a Met? You think of him as a Giant, whether it's a New York Giant or a San Francisco Giant. To the end of his career, he was a Met. Johnny Mize was a superstar with the Cardinals and with the New York Giants. The Yankees bought his contract out towards the end of his career. Eddie Matthews played for the Boston Braves briefly, mainly with the Milwaukee Braves, a little bit with the Atlanta Braves, and then got kicked around between the Astros and the Tigers. I put a picture of him with the Tigers. And Pedro, who we all remember with the Red Sox, came up with the Dodgers, became a superstar with Montreal, became a legend in Boston, was good but broken down with the Mets towards the end, and then finished up with half a season with Philadelphia. So the big hint there is the pictures of them are with the teams that they finished their career up with. So that's the big hint I'm giving to you. What do those five have in common while I'm showing a picture of them at the end of the career? Well, Eric Boberek got close. He said, did they each end their career with a World Series loss? No. Woods 415 said, if it's what I think it is, Beltran may join him in a few years, which is shows that he's on the right track. And I asked him to say, okay, what would that be? And he said, he played in the World Series in the finals in their final season. And I said, you're 97% of the way there. And then he kind of danced around. I said, ended career in the clinching game. He should have made the, and then someone else wrote Eric Boberek said, did they each end their career with a World Series loss? And do you want Eric Boberek? You got close enough. Send me an email at info@sullybaseball.com because I'm going to give you credit. You were the one who got closest. You and do you want, and Woods 415. So Woods 415 and Eric Boberek, if you're listening, shoot me an email because I'm going to send you a prize. It's going to be one of the books that by Dan Epstein, either the Big Hair and Plastic Grass or the Stars and Strikes, one of the two. The answer to the trivia question of what do Hall of Famers Joe DiMaggio, Willie Mays, Johnny Mize, Eddie Matthews, and Pedro Martinez all uniquely have in common? They all played their final games as a major leaguer in the World Series. Joe DiMaggio in the 1951 World Series with the Yankees. That was his last year and Mickey Mantle's first year. Willie Mays played his final game in the 1973 World Series with the Mets when they lost to the A's. Johnny Mize, who played all those years in St. Louis and with the Giants, finished his career with the 1953 World Series with the Yankees. Eddie Matthews, who did indeed win a World Series ring with the Milwaukee Braves, picked up his second World Series ring as a member of the Detroit Tigers in 1968. And Pedro Martinez played his final game in the 2009 World Series as a member of the Phillies against the New York Yankees. So that's the answer to that trivia question that I thought up on my own self. There are a couple other people where it got precariously close to having a Hall of Famer finish their career in the World Series. Two Hall of Famers finished their careers as a member of a World Series team, but they were injured and not on the active roster. One of them would be Tom Seaver, who played his final games as a major leaguer with the 1986 Boston Red Sox, who lost to the Mets in the World Series. Isn't that odd that Tom Seaver, if he was healthy, could have pitched against the Mets in the World Series? The Red Sox really needed Tom Seaver. He was no longer an ace, but he was still an effective pitcher, and he was injured, and they were hoping he'd be healthy in time for the postseason, but he wasn't. Another one was Dave Winfield, who played his final games with the 1995 Cleveland Indians. I bet you forgot that. As a part-time designated hitter, I don't even know if he was injured or not. He just was done. And he was in the dugout. He was introduced before the World Series. He was in uniform but was not on the active roster. So Winfield and Seaver almost joined that list. And there are some who finished their career in the postseason. John Smoltz and Greg Maddux immediately come to mind as two people who finished, who are Hall of Famers, who finished their career in the postseason playing the League Championship Series and the Division Series. And if Carlos Beltran makes it to the Hall of Fame, and if he does, and I think he is a Hall of Fame player. Of course, he has been suspended as his part of the Houston Astros 2017 World Series scandal, that whether or not that will affect the Hall of Fame vote for him, it probably will to a certain degree. But if and when that happens, if he joins the Hall of Fame, his final game was played in that notorious 2017 Astros club. So there you go. That's my trivia question. I'll try to come up with another one along the way that we can all enjoy, talk about, and think about over our food. And what are you doing for food these days? What are you doing? How are you getting your food? Are you supporting your local businesses? Let me tell you, if you're like me, then you probably think about what you got to have for dinner while you're eating lunch. I love eating, and I love supporting our local businesses, especially in this global crisis. That's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I could think of right to my door. Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi. They make grocery store deliveries and convenience store deliveries as well. So no more trips to the store. You don't have to be wringing your hands of whether or not you want to do that or not. Trust Postmates. Just download the Postmates on iOS and Android. Find your favorite and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the code LOCKEDON. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Hey, there was something going on Twitter. We're all on Twitter these days, aren't we? I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter. If you want to follow the show, it's at LockedOnMLB_net. Baseball Brit is a Twitter handle that I follow. Big baseball fan out there in Great Britain. You probably could have figured that out from his handle. He posted something on the 9th of April that caught my attention. And when I wind up responding a bunch of times, I'm like, I wonder if there's probably something to talk about here. He said, please quote tweet this with your most controversial baseball opinion. And the first thing that popped in my mind is something that I think, something that I feel that I get friction upon, that I see people disagree with me. I'm not saying that they're right, not saying that I'm right, I'm saying I'm right. First thing I wrote was, I like the DH. And I like pitchers hitting. I like both. The idea of a universal DH is stupid, and I've yet to hear a valid argument for that I can even consider for a moment. I do like the DH. I like that it has extended careers. I like that we've seen players like Don Baylor and David Ortiz and Harold Baines and Edgar Martinez and Paul Molitor and the aforementioned Dave Winfield be able to extend their careers, reach certain goals. Hell, by the end, Hank Aaron was a designated hitter. I like the DH, but I also like pitchers batting. I do like having the specter of, I don't know, should we take the pitcher out? Should we take him, not take him out? Do we double switch? Do we use a pinch hitter here? I do like throwing that added wrinkle of, let's have this pitcher finish this inning. We know he has a spot coming up. Or they're leaving him in to bunt or leaving him to get a hit. I like both. You can like both things. I like the movie Airplane, and I liked Parasite. I like Raiders of the Lost Ark. I also like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I can like two very different kinds of films. I can like different TV shows. I like Family Feud. I like Breaking Bad. I like them both. I enjoy listening to classical music. I also like listening to Talking Heads. You can like more than one thing. That's a possible thing. That sentence didn't come out the way I wanted it to. You can like more than one thing. And I like the fact that the two leagues are different. That when there's interleague play, there is an added wrinkle to it. I do like the strategy of it. I do. And the people who try to say, well, pitchers have a hard time hitting. They usually have a low average. Yeah, and? Is that your argument? So that makes the strategy more interesting for me. And I've been in the stadium when pitchers get a big hit. When a pitcher hits a home run, the place goes ballistic. I've been there for a couple of Madison Bumgarner home runs, one of the most talked about Met moments of the last decade, maybe even more talked about than their damn pennant, was the home run hit by Bartolo Colon. There's something badass when a pitcher launches a home run. The place goes crazy. The place goes bananas whenever a pitcher gets a hit because it's a middle finger. It's a wonderful thing. And it's deflating for the other team. Believe me, one of the most underrated deflating moments of the 1986 World Series as a Boston Red Sox fan was the fact that in the bottom of the eighth inning, when the Red Sox were down by two in Game 7, and they were still holding out hope that they could rally, Jesse Orosco got an RBI single to add in an insurance run. A reliever. So why are we removing that? Seriously. I don't understand why people, if you prefer the DH, that's fine. But why are you eliminating one of the things that always gets a gigantic cheer and makes people happy? I don't get it. I've heard people try to explain it to me. And the only thing they tell me is that pitchers don't hit well. We've established that. We've established that. I like variety. I can like more than one thing. What are some of the other things I wrote? Not only was Vin Scully not the best announcer in baseball history, but when he did games with Joe Garagiola, he was not the best announcer in that booth. Yeah, when Vin Scully retired a few years ago, and I was in Los Angeles when all this was happening, the tidal wave of adulation was palpable. And I'm not raining on Vin Scully's parade. He's obviously a fine announcer. But one of the reasons why he has achieved such a level of grandiose respect is that he was the last living link, basically, to the team when they were in Brooklyn. And he came over when the team moved from Brooklyn, so there was still a sense of the team's history with him there. He did have a great set of pipes. He was a fine announcer, but he also survived. He was also there a long time. Ned Martin of the Red Sox was fantastic as well. I believe that Joe Garagiola was the greatest announcer I've ever heard in my life, and I stand by that. And if you go to some of the old NBC games that he broadcast that still exist on YouTube, listen to them. They're filled with humor. They're filled with passion. They're filled with knowledge. They're filled with respect, but they're filled with joy and fun. And he was in the booth with Vin Scully all those years. Now, Joe isn't remembered with one team the way Vin Scully was. And Joe did the worst thing you could possibly do, and that is die. And maybe that the fact that he didn't stay at the booth for as long as he did, he retired and he did other things like Today Show hosting and game show hosting and everything. He was the greatest baseball announcer I ever heard. Vin Scully was fine. I don't think he was better than Ned Martin. I don't think he was better than several other ones. I don't think he's better than John Miller and Kruko and Kipe with the Giants. Sacrilege, perhaps. It's my thought. Which brings me to another one. The only reason Fenway Park is beloved is because it survived. There's nothing about it that's more special than Crosley Field, Forbes Field, Connie Mack Stadium, Comiskey Park, I mistakenly wrote Comiskey Field, or Tiger Stadium, other than it evaded the wrecking ball. And I stand by that. I stand by that Fenway Park is revered as this great castle of baseball memory because it didn't get destroyed. The Yawkeys wanted to do it. They wanted to build a new park for the Red Sox and have it be a multi-purpose stadium that they share with the Patriots. They had all sorts of plans for that, including a domed stadium in downtown Boston. And then 1967 came around, and Red Sox energy was reignited, which had been dormant. Look at the attendance of the late 50s and early 60s when there was nobody at the stadium. Fenway Park was considered a dump. Nobody was there. No one went to see the games. Nobody cared about the Red Sox. The Yawkeys threatened to move the team. They wanted to have a dome stadium. And then 1967 came around, and people started flocking to the stadium. They fell in love with the Red Sox all over again. That's really the beginning of Red Sox Nation. And it evaded the wreckers ball just as all those other stadiums started to come down. Crosley Field, Forbes Field, Connie Mack Stadium, all those stadiums started getting destroyed in the late 60s, early 70s. Now, if Fenway hit the wrecking ball and suddenly the fans in Cincinnati turned to Crosley Field, suddenly the fans in Pittsburgh fell in love with Forbes Field all over again, if the Pirates had their renaissance, that they had in the 70s a few years prior. If the Reds, if the flourishing of the big red machine took place in the mid-60s instead of the early 70s, we may have had Crosley Field. And then Fenway Park would have been as obscure a memory to people my age from New England as Braves Field. And you go to Fenway Park, it's still nice. It is. It's an old-fashioned park. But it's no different than any of those other parks, other than it made it. Wrigley and Fenway made it. If they had knocked down Wrigley and Comiskey was saved, then Comiskey Park would be considered the great jewel, and there'd be this weird... There was a park that the Cubs played in. I don't really remember it. What were some of the other things I said? I would rather see bunts than walks. Now, this may upset some people who are sabermetrically minded. This may upset the same people who don't understand what I was talking about with the DH. But I think a walk is boring. No, you know, the pitcher couldn't find the strike zone. The batter just stood there. Yes, it's in the middle of a rally. You know, he got on. That's great. And I understand for people who are sabermetrically minded and people who just want to look at the on-base and the OPS and all the other stuff, I understand why you don't like bunts. I get it. I get that bunting a runner from first to second actually decreases your chance of scoring, okay? Bunting a runner from second to third doesn't, but you understand what I mean. But a bunt, most of the time, it's you lay down the bunt, the pitcher picks it up, third baseman picks it up, throws it over to first, first baseman picks it up, throws it to second covering, whatever. It's kind of that. There you go. There was a bunt. But sometimes you bunt at the right place and you get on base. You bunt it and the fielder's not quite fielding it the right way, they can throw it away. Hell, game three of the 2014 National League Championship Series ended because of a bunt was thrown into right field. There is the possibility of chaos. Chaos is your friend. Chaos is the thing you want on the field. You want the ball going one way, the runner going another way, fielders trying to pick it up, figure out where to go, throw it to the right base, throw it to the right time, charge in. Bunts can create chaos. Most of the time they don't. Just like most of the time the pitcher's batting results in strike three or a weak grounder. But when it doesn't, it's one of the things that's great in baseball, which is chaos, which is anarchy. I know that most of the time a bunt play is not the smart play to do and not the sabermetrically correct thing to do. Same as stealing a base. I think the runner taking off, he's gone, is always exciting to me. Maybe it's because I was raised on 80s baseball, which had tons of base stealing. And I like that. Is it the smart thing to do? Is it the healthy thing to do? No, not always. But do you know what? Do you go through life saying, do you know what? I'm only going to eat kale and celery and beet juice? Or do you like to have a piece of chocolate? Did you have any chocolate on Easter? Was that the right thing to eat? Was it the healthy thing to eat? No, but it was fun. Which is why I would rather see bunts than walks. I find them to be more entertaining, or at least have a larger chance of being entertaining. And those are some of the thoughts that I had. I have a couple other ones, but I'm saving those in the back pocket because those could be full-time rants. But this week we're going to be talking about some of the best teams of the 2000 and the 1990s, both who won the championship and one who didn't. And then we're going to be replaying the 2017 World Series as if the Yankees moved on and the Astros could sit in their trash cans. So go to the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. You can like us on all the apps where you get your podcasts. When you're at home being smart, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network. What really is your team every day, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball. Wonderful, wonderful show. This has been the Locked On MLB podcast for the 14th day of April, 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.